everyone. Welcome to our podcast. This week, we have an episode that features me and a guest star from the Los Angeles Dodgers, but maybe not the one you're thinking of because we had a couple. Should be fun diving into this, and there are lots of stories around it. I say we get started. I'm Barry Williams.
I'm Christopher Knight.
And we are
the real Brady Bros.
Okay, this was fun looking back. It was a very simple kind of plot, as we've talked about before. Because it featured Greg Brady, first scene, first cut is it shows a Greg Brady.
Your Tell theory about, is holding true.
Yes, well, this is season one. Tell us about our directors and writers and.
The episode that we'll break down today is The Undergraduate from season one. First aired January 23, 1970. It's the 17th episode of season one. And being that it's season one, it's the 17th episode in total to have aired. This episode is directed by Oscar Rudolph, written by David P. Harmon, and has two guest stars, Wes Parker from the Dodgers.
First baseman.
Gigi Perreau as Linda O'Hara.
Perreau, yes.
Perreau.
And we'll talk about her and Greg's big first crush. Also, I just want to take everyone back to so we can set the scene here on season one. This is when the Peppermint Trolley is still singing the theme song. The Brady Kids have not recorded it and played it. Carol has her wig. That only lasted for the first year. Mike Brady, short haircut, straight hair. And Cindy is still the youngest one in curls. And also, at some point, Bobby's hair, which was dyed in the first few episodes, apparently they stopped dyeing his hair black because in the credits, the opening boxes, or the Zoom boxes, as we now know them, his natural color was there, which was red.
Now, well, there's one other thing about this show that I didn't notice, and after sensing it in this show, I went back and looked at another first season show, and sure enough, it was the same. And that is the music after the credits. Mm-hmm. We come to the establishing shot, and there's always some music as we start the episode. Mm-hmm. This year's music, whatever that interstitial music is to bring us into the Brady household, is totally different than what I'm accustomed to knowing as that Brady music. There's a whimsical kind of quality to it, you know, that I'm used to. But if you listen to the music in season one coming in, it is totally different. It's a little more simple, a little bit more like classic television, you know. Mm-hmm. Next time we do a season number one, take a listen to it, Barry, because I don't know why I haven't noticed it until this time. Because
it's kind of like our theme song different. For the Brady Bros. Very television oriented.
Yeah.
And also we're also accustomed to how they manipulated the theme song into all of the moods later on. So we had the Here's the Story song in happy and sad, in a kind of romantic. So you'd see if it was a happy song, you hear da 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 ba da 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 da, and if there was a problem, it'd be da 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 da.
Maybe that's what I'm missing. Maybe that is. That's the lick. You know, I think that we settled on that lick entering the home when every show started, but it wasn't there in the first season.
Yeah, kind of gives it a signature.
You know, and it's sort of like, wow, I'm off, you know, this is not the Brady Bunch, you know, but I guess we didn't start there. They had to, you know, settle on something that was more appropriate perhaps for our show.
Oh boy, I tell you, this show reminded me that Greg from the get-go was always trying to hook up with the ladies, you know, always had, a crush, a fascination with, or something. And this right here in our first season, I guess, kind of started that ball.
Well, so does art imitate life? Or is life imitating art? Because if I'm not mistaken, in this show, you have this crush on what it's your teacher, an older woman.
Well, yeah,
I would be 15. Did they know you well enough to know that sort of you had a soft spot for older women and a kind of like an appetite that couldn't be satiated running after, you know?
Well, it depends on if the writer,
older woman.
It depends on if the writer took me out to lunch or not. This was very relatable for me, you know, and as the method actor that I am, I was pulling from my real life experience. First grade, actually first and second, but first grade is really the one who's stuck with me. Her name was Miss Reeves, and a major crush on her. And I always, when we, you know, we had to walk to the playground with the whole class, I would always get up front so that I could hold her hand, because, you know, all the students had to hold hands in the lines behind.
You're in first grade, seven. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, six. Mm-hmm. And then at recess, I would write love notes, like, I love you, you know, in the, you know, print, that kind of thing, you know, and then I would throw it through the window, because she would stay in during the recess grading papers or whatever, and I would throw it in. And I was doing this also in the second grade, because I still had a crush on her. And just, you know, I mean, she just made me go, my heart pitter-patter. And
did you ever write letters to two different older women at the same time? Two teachers?
Not at the same time. No, I was always just a single teacher at a time.
Serial,
you know, teacher, lover.
Love fanatic.
Crush,
okay.
Person. Well, what happened was my heart was broken because Miss Reeves came in one day and announced that she was getting married. And I realized at that point, I knew enough that, my fantasy of spending our lives together was probably not going to happen. And
so you had a lot to draw on in this episode.
I really did.
Because at this point, you're 12, 13 years old. So you're
almost 50.
This is 1970, right? 70. Yeah. So 69. We would have done that in 69. Might have aired in 70.
I was just turning 16 in September in 70.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So you were 16. And that means that you're no longer treating older women like you did when you were in first or second grade. That had progressed some.
Yeah.
And so what we are probably seeing is the 16-year-old version of that kid in this episode, right?
Well, that is kind of why I mentioned it, because it's so overacted. I mean, the kind of the dreamy look that I have in my eyes and that all that, it's like goo goo gaga. And it looks like appropriate for a 6-7-year-old boy instead of a 15-year-old
Barry
kid.
You were excellent in this show. It's sometimes very hard for us to grade ourselves. You were excellent, and that was the style. And you had Oscar Rudolph as your director, and
yes,
he was making certain he got that out of you. That was his direction, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, it might have looked a little simplistic, but it did work in context of this show. I just didn't realize you had so much rich history to draw from. Though, personally, you would, by the second or third year, show us all, you know, how infatuated you could get with an older woman.
I'm not sure where you're going.
We could see what the older woman's reaction was to a younger boy's interest. And how that is dealt with. Yeah. And it was kind of, I mean, in retrospect, cute, but yeah.
I tried to play innocence up best I could.
Well, they got the innocence out of you in this show. That first scene just, I haven't watched the show in 53 years. So watching it again was quite enjoyable. And this first scene was a gas. I mean, it was the puppy dog look that you brought to the character coming in to have to get
your paper signed.
Yeah. It was written so funny because the Greg character is like going, I failed my test. Give me facts. It was hysterical. So in this episode, if you're having a hard time following us, Greg comes home, like Barry's theory, following Barry's theory that the star of the show is going to be in the first scene.
It actually opens on me in bed looking into space. Right. And then we get a little taste of it then. Carol comes in. Alice comes in. Carol thinks I have a problem. So because I'm not answering or making sense, she takes my temperature, which kind of sets up a whole bunch of gags later. And so that was the first thing that happened.
Right. And then Alice comes in and then find you know, like,
did you want everything in the laundry chute to be washed? And I said, yes. Even your transistor radio.
Transistor radio. That was the state. That was it. That was high tech at the time. Transistor radio.
And I just, you know, I'm kind of like, oh, please, Alice, don't take my temperature. Just give me my transistor radio.
I'm not sure I knew that we had a laundry chute, but I guess if I would have paid it more attention.
Two-story house. Well, ours was not just any two-story house. It had whatever we needed for whichever episode we needed it. Like, for instance, If we didn't need the attic as a bedroom, it was 6 inches high. If we needed a bedroom in the attic, all of a sudden, it's got an 8-foot ceiling.
Well, according to Kara, my wife, that who had a laundry chute in a 2-story house, that they missed a great opportunity there because every one of her sisters were caught going down the laundry chute. And there are stories around the laundry chute.
Successfully?
Stuff breaking, people breaking. more or less successfully. But of course, not maybe the parents' worst nightmare, but hopefully there were clothes underneath it that you were landing in, like a big pile of them.
So you were alluding to a problem Greg had, not just because of this crush, but because he was not doing well in his classes, and this required, well, a little talk with Mike.
Right, it's the fever that Greg figuratively seems to have, and the reason why Carol is taking his temperature, is not a sick fever. It's a fever of another kind, and we don't really know about it at this point, but when he comes in
it's
to
kind of a,
Mike's
it's like
den.
It's like a cowbell fever. You got to have more.
The way that it's played to the audiences and to Mike and Carol is they have no idea what's going on with Greg, but they know something wrong is going on because he comes in with this something that Mike has to sign.
A little piece of paper.
And he just puts the paper down and puts his hand over like a good part of the paper.
Just sign over here, Dad. This is just that line down there, just below my little finger. Yeah, just sign that.
The gumption. I can't believe but the look in your face.
Help me out.
You're driving this bus and you're going to drive it down this street. But Dad, of course, says, you mind if I read what it is you're having me sign? And of course, it's a test that Greg failed. Big F at the top.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Dad, if you fail a test, then you got to have your parents sign it. Well, what's the problem? No problem. Just get it signed.
I love it when you said
it all figured out.
What happened? And you said, I failed.
I
it's like, yeah, I can see that.
But this did provide one of our takeaways for the episode. How is Mike going to handle that? I mean, Greg, that's not normal, right? Greg's usually a very good student, does very well. Good
straight
grades,
A now, student. I mean, yeah, he's right. Had A's in math, right?
So he comes up with his advice, little Mike Brady lecture. All right, he's not going to make a big deal out of it, he says, but you better buckle down, young man. Hit the books. Your grades will come up. Now, what kid... This is why I think people like our show. What kid would not like to have a father that would like to say, okay, you know, I get it. It's a one-off. Forget it. No problem. Just buckle down, will you? Because I don't want this to become a big problem. Then I have faith in you. Your grades will come up. Isn't that great fatherly advice?
It is. It is. And it's very easy for a child who has other instincts to take advantage of that.
And I know your father was exactly like that. And so was mine. If that had happened in my family, I think my dad probably would have signed it while my hand was over it. Just keep moving. Keep moving.
Yeah, right. Make sure you get him.
Thanks, Dad.
Really
okay,
busy.
See you later.
Yeah, well, but did you notice a little slap that he gives you as you walk out the door?
I did
He slaps you in the butt, like you're walking away from him, and he just, from behind, he just slaps
tap.
You.
Little
it's almost,
tap.
You know, it wasn't corporal punishment. It was like a camaraderie pat on the butt.
I might have missed a moment there. Yeah, I could have turned around and go, ow!
I think it played really well, really honestly. So, well, you've got to fail. You never really failed math before, had trouble with math before, so that alerts Carol and Mike to something going on with Greg. And then Carol shares with Mike that she thought you were sick and didn't have a temperature. What happens next?
Well, I think that Greg, in a rare scene, goes to Marcia for advice.
Oh, that's right.
And he starts with, hey, Marcia, you're a girl, right? Marcia says, are you feeling okay?
She was so good in this scene. Yeah, she was so real.
And, you know, it's like, well, yeah, you know, I mean, you know how girls feel about things. Don't you, Greg?
But this leads to one of the funniest moments that I can appreciate now, having watched the show, and that is you doing the impersonations, the quiet impersonations of each of these people that she then utters are sexy or what a girl looks for,
right,
in a man or a boy, is described through movie stars and
it's a who's who list of movie stars. You know, like rugged like Paul Newman, a little goofy like maybe Dustin Hoffman. Well, I'm kind of a ladies' man like Dean Martin. You know, and I'm acting each one of these guys out. So it was fun. It was fun scene to do.
The first one was Steve McQueen, rugged like Steve McQueen. Like Paul. But the fact is you had a very distinct persona that you, it's almost like you were doing charades, but that you found and delivered that was comically brilliant. And I'm going to ask, I mean, even at that age, you knew who Dean Martin was.
I literally knew every one of these people. And from the
and
movie,
the Dustin Hoffman guy, it was just hysterical.
When he played the savant. I think that was the movie.
Oh, no, this was I think you did that one. I mean,
or it might have been Midnight Cowboy. When he was limping, whatever. And I might have asked for a couple of them as suggestions. Lloyd, because that's the kind of a thing that he would. Lloyd Schwartz, who had a great depth and resource for all these stars and movies and seeing them and probably knew a lot of them.
I mean, you had 6 seconds, which maybe less, 4 seconds, and you hit a pose with each one of them that would just top the last one.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. And then she comes up with the final one, right? And the most important one. And that is a man with a mustache. So Greg is all trying to find his mustache. It's got to be here somewhere. Peter, come help me. Come help me find this thing.
Yeah, we get into the bathroom where Peter's... Was it the bathroom? We start in the boys' room. We go into the bathroom. But, then it's me in my early style of acting, which is to shout every line, every word in every line.
There's got to be some sign. Is there any sign? Just look carefully. Look on my upper lip. Isn't there something? I can feel something.
closer. And I say, I'm getting closer. I'll be wearing the same pajamas. Oh, getting closer, we'll be wearing the same pajamas. it's like...
Isn't that where you remind me that if I really didn't want to have a mustache, no matter how appealing it might be, because it would mess up my baseball career?
Wouldn't that interesting? Couldn't have long hair or mustache if you want to be on the ball team or the baseball team.
And a little foreshadowing of our guest star to come, right? Golden Glove winner.
I'm thinking that the baseball team that we know anything of is not, it's not men yet. I mean, this is Pony League or lower. This is Little League. What kid has mustache in Little League?
Well, some do, some kids start very soon, very early.
That's like that facial hair that isn't really yet a mustache. It's just facial hair, and you're going to have to tell kids to shave it off? Okay, well, I guess that happened. Anyway, that's what we played, and of course, that makes Greg realize that he can't grow a mustache. He certainly can't use that device
Mom and Dad are trying to figure out what the heck is going on with me. They discussed a couple of possibilities of illnesses that I had forgotten about, but being in a COVID, sort of era.
Hyper aware. Now,
I mean, these were the things of the day that were very, very frightening. One was the Asian flu.
It was German measles, but we didn't, not in this show. But if you start looking at all the things that we were, in the day trying, to avoid getting, they all seem to have a nationality attached.
Jungle fever.
how things don't change.
Yeah.
Jungle fever, yeah. Oh, okay, well, that's an interlude that helps, set the table to the time that we were produced in, right?
Because
wasn't necessary, but that's what everybody was calling it at the time. The jungle fever thing was an interesting choice. I don't remember jungle fever actually being something that...
Plus, it was a hit record. Did you not get that?
I don't know what to do with it,
Yeah.
I'm going
just
down.
Sing it.
I'm driving
jungle
down this road.
Jungle fever. Jungle fever. Okay, Alice to the Rescue, right? I drop one of my books. A poem falls out of it. She's going to share it with Mike and Carol and reads it. And it's a poem. It's a poem that I'd written.
Well, not a poem that you've written. It's a poem
one that I plagiarized.
You lifted. From
Shakespeare,
and it was a blend of
Robert Burns, which of course our intellectual father, says, well, obviously this is Shakespeare, and with a smidgen of Robert Burns thrown in,
right? And they at this point don't really know that it's yours, but then Alice, after they're not really taking seriously, thinking that this is something that you wrote, she then reads who it's from, or who it's to. And signed Greg. It's to Linda, signed right. Greg. So now all of a sudden, it's clear. It's a clear love letter, love poems, and it is from Greg, written by Greg, and it is going to a girl named Linda. Well, at least they've got that now. So the show
Just before they said that, as you know, they thought maybe that Alice was reading a poem that she had received, and it had come from Sam. And she says, "Well, wait, look, no, it's not. It's a Sam's idea of a romance is 2 pounds of liver heart shape.
Liver heart shape, yeah,
heart shape, right? Yeah. And 2 pounds then we find out it's just to Linda from Grig."
So now at least Mike and Carol, they know who they're hunting for, Linda. But part of this hunt is looking through your yearbook or one of the yearbooks that that you came, and they're looking for a, and they said there's no Linda in whatever size of the school there is. I mean, I went to school, in high school, there were 3,500 kids. I mean, and it was a 3-year high school. So, and I know maybe you're in high school at this point, right? Not junior, right? Right. Okay. So yeah. There would be no way. Well, you know, the debate will come up here in a minute about where we live. No one would ever admit to where we lived. And they pulled the rug completely over this one's eyes because I believe that, you know, we didn't really live in California. Otherwise, we would have said we lived in California, but we weren't allowed to do that. Later in the show, we'll find out there's a Dodger, you know, that lives in the neighborhood. So what does that say to you? This kid was asleep at the wheel. But we are in California, then the schools are going to be big, a lot of kids, but they're just looking, no, there's no Linda in here. And then at the end of that scene, it's like, you got a Mary? No, there's no Mary. It just was unbelievable to me that you would say Linda in the entire school.
So we go into, I've been detained at school. I'm staying after, and I am staying and I'm staring with this just lost in space, crush eyes on who turns out to be my teacher. My teacher, and she is. I'm just, you know, watching her, and I'm trying to get her to help me. And that now we find out.
Now, do we know when we go to the scene? Let me think. Do we know that she's Linda? We don't. Watching the show, at one point, the audience is aware of who Linda is, but Mike and Carol still are not. Right.
That's correct. That's correct.
And this is this scene where all of a sudden we find out her name is Linda. We know that this is the one you have a crush on because we can see the crush as she's trying to help you through.
I don't know that we find out in this scene. The scene where we find out is a note is sent to Mike and...
Oh, that's right.
And the teacher, Greg's math teacher, would like to have a parent conference with him and signs it, Linda O'Hara.
That's when they find out, but there's a whole bunch of funny stuff that happens prior to that. When they're trying to hunt. They can't. There's no Linda in the yearbook. And then at one point, Alice is trying to get out of Peter and Cindy and then Jan, whether or not they know any Lindas, striking out all three times. But the funny one was in a very short bit between Jan and Alice when Alice asks Jan something about knowing a Linda. How do you feel about Linda? You know, and then Jan pops up, "Mom's pregnant." I thought that was the funniest was little fun moment, you know? And then, right. You know, she runs in, mom's pregnant.
That was one of them. And then she has to spend, mom has to spend a lot of time, you know, convincing Jan that she's not really going to have a baby. She goes to you though, and you're making a racing car in the backyard and wants to know if you'd like to name the car, the racing car. And she, yeah, well, that's not a bad idea. Well, how about Linda? And you're not going for that. She also has Kitty Carryall. Kitty Carryall is in this one with Cindy, who's become famous doll from our show, Kitty Carryall, and Alice is trying to get her to rename Kitty Carryall Linda, and then goes to pick up a stuffed animal and says, "Hey, what about this one?" It's just, you know, she says whatever she said, Emily, I think, and she says, "Well, what about Linda?" No, it's Emily. And
then not Emily, because when she picks up the little lion, it's like, okay. That's a boy. Yeah,
that's a boy.
So we're setting up that they're on the hunt for somebody named Linda, and Marcia comes home from school with three friends, one of them brand new to the neighborhood, and introduces this girl to Carol.
From Seattle.
Seattle. What's that
from
about?
Seattle.
Seattle. I don't... What, is that
you know
a that, speech?
You know that stopped production for a couple times. Florence was not having it. She goes, well, you know, like, why is this...
Britain,
why is she saying Seattle? Well, no, she was... I believe she was coached child actress, and somebody said, you know, this is Seattle. Say Seattle. And so that's she got that in her mind. She couldn't say anything else. And it just sounded very odd.
Yeah, it did. It sounded like somebody that lived in England trying to say Seattle, somebody with an affected accent. Okay, but this girl is introduced as
Linda.
Linda. New to the neighborhood.
Carol's all about this. She's all over it. So tell me about yourself.
Absolutely certain they found the Linda. What would happen?
Till Greg comes in and Carol says, say hello to Linda. And I go, hi, well, it's nice to meet
you. I'm great. You introduce yourself to her.
I introduced myself. Well, that didn't work. Carol was crushed. That's when the note comes to a little late.
That's when Mike comes back with the note from school that is from your teacher. And her name is Linda.
Linda. Now the things are beginning to add up and to make sense.
And never have two parents been so
concerned,
busy and concerned with their son who's 15 years old and a crush he might have. I mean, you're going to have crush. You have to deal with the crush and still pass classes, not to find out the girl's name. I mean, what are you going to do? Go to the girl and, you know.
But this is what we love about us Bradys. You know, the all for one and one for all. And this is another example of that. One person has a problem. This now takes up everybody's attention because nobody has our own life. Nobody has our own hobbies, interests, outside activities, sports to go to. All we're going to do is sit around and try and solve whichever kid is having a problem that week.
It's a star and everyone else in support.
Yeah, yeah. Rotate.
All right, so this is when we now get to class and we see dreamy-eyed Greg having a hard time after school focusing on the math in front of him because Linda is over his shoulder and helping him.
Anyway, I'm doing everything I can to capture her attention and ask for more help and anything I can get to get her to lean down a little closer and maybe change the answers on my paper.
And yeah, and this is one more of those moments for you where, you know, the audience is asked to suspend disbelief. Just, you know, they're stretched a little bit because you're so obviously not focusing on the math. And Linda, the actress playing Linda, is not noticing what, you know, you're so obvious about it. Should have
hard to imagine. Yeah, it's hard to imagine.
Exactly. But this is the way you were directed. Right, right.
And it couldn't be that this was the first time that would have happened to her either. And, you know, with kids and students, and, you know, around this age of high school and what have you.
Yeah, like her radar isn't up from this because it's happened before. I'm sure all teachers have that as something that they have to negotiate.
Hey, I have an interesting side story about this actress, Gigi Perreau. She became an acting teacher with many students, but among them, Meghan Markle was a student of Gigi Perreau's. And they became so close, in fact, that when Meghan got married in London, Gigi was invited to the wedding and attended.
How about that?
Yeah. My invitation, I think, got lost in the mail. Gigi did not call, but it's true. I hadn't spoken to her in 50 years. But anyway.
Yeah, just let you go. Let you go. All right. So having spazzed out on base 10 math because Linda was rubbing against you, you need to try again.
She wasn't rubbing against me. I wanted her to rub. Just clean my desk, would you please?
You needed more help. You needed close supervision. You got it.
So when does Mike get there? He comes in. Oh, he figures it out. That's the math teacher, and that's the problem.
Well, she's called for a meeting with him. And so he shows up at school and into the classroom where there's no Greg. And it's because Greg has been asked to go out and do an errand for teacher Linda.
At the principal's office, I think.
Yeah, you're going to the principal's office to get something. It's not because you're in trouble. It's just that she needed something, and she called it an errand. Mike comes in and introduces himself. And somehow, because passing, he finds out that her boyfriend is waiting for her in a car. Mike apparently has seen this man in a car, puts two and two together, and I guess recognizes him in the car, then says, if that's your fiancé. He finds out that she's got a fiancé. And we have to assume at this point he's already recognized this person in the car. Mm-hmm. He goes out and gets him.
Well, and that's very likely that he would, because Wes Parker was not just the Dodgers' first baseman and a very cited athlete, but he's a Golden Glove winner.
I understand that. It's just, it was just strange. I mean, just strange that he recognizes him that quickly and says, can I bring him in? Greg comes back into class and he says to his teacher, did I just see my dad? And, it's my dad here.
Leaving, right.
Yeah. But before you can get too panicked about your dad being, in school, dad walks in with Wes Parker. And then your goo-goo eyes turn from teacher Linda.
This is what I mean about over the top.
Wes Parker.
I got the same eyes going on here. They just got transferred from Linda O'Hara to Wes Parker.
It's now you're kind of like mesmerized. It's like there's no more Linda. It's just Wes Parker. And that happens to break the fever somehow.
Yeah, obviously, I immediately recognize. But in true Brady fashion, Mike Brady had a very good suggestion. Wes comes in, and he's very friendly. He says, hi, and like that. And he says, Greg, I want you to get an A in math. And I'll tell you what, I'll let you trade that A in for two tickets to the opening game of the season. Oh, yes, sir. I'll get an A.
Now he's on the right course.
I'm on the right track now. Mike starts to go out. Then he has another thought to come back. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah. This was a little smarmy, but okay.
Yeah, we don't know if this would fly today, but he says, Ms. O'Hara, I'd like to pay you a compliment. And now this, while she's standing right next to her fiance, if I had had a teacher that looked like you, I'd have gotten an F too.
Right. Yeah.
Well, they laughed. Yeah, liked it. They got it. It's funny how something like that probably would have been written differently today.
Yeah. A little bit more panache, perhaps. Yeah. It kind of resolves our problem, doesn't it? For a moment.
You know what happens there?
Now one of your theorems is proven incorrect.
Ooh.
Or is it mine? It's my theory that's now going to be proven incorrect. And I said, and the teaser, always the front end of the show is always the star of the show. That was your theory. Mine was, and the tag is always the subplot. Not that there was much of a subplot in this show, but it's not. It's you again.
Well, that's because Greg has to learn the same lesson over and over and over again. We again pick up with Greg laying on his side in bed, facing what should be the wall, but is actually the camera, for obvious reasons, back to the door. Same, got the same eyes going on again.
Comes down the hallway, sees him again, comes on in.
And wants to know what's going on. Now, she's going to be armed with a thermometer, if I'm not careful here. But I say, no, mom, I'm fine. I got a new substitute teacher in biology. She has red hair and blue eyes, and wow. Carol running out of the room. Mike!
She kind of backs out one step at a time, and then yeah. it was a funny ending. So before we get into whatever the moral of the story is, I'm confused about as a kid, I wanted to believe adults, and did, right? For as long as I could. I remember having a teacher at one point that I must have misunderstood, but I couldn't ever get rid of it out of my head, that said there were actually 365 and a quarter days a year. And I heard it as 364 and a quarter for some reason. The math's not right. And so forever, I believe there was 364 days a year outside of the quarter that would make up the one day every 4 years you have to put together. And It's just a testimony to my inability when learning something from adult early to let go of it. And it has to be in that this idea of where we were, like where the Brady house was, the answers were right in front of me. Clearly enough for me to ask the question, but it was people like Lloyd who would then say, no, it's not Los Angeles. Bradys don't live in Los Angeles, that I then had to believe. And I look at this show like this, and I go, how could I have believed anything else? We got a Dodger, and we're going to have another in the show.
Right. Exactly.
Deacon Jones.
I think the whole thing like this came just from a board meeting of some kind. Well, where are we going to set the show? And they say, well, we don't want to offend anyone. It'll be California weather. It will be sunny all year long. It'll be in a suburban area. We'll have convertible cars. We're going to have guest celebrities that are from Los Angeles, but we'll call it Anywhere USA.
But I can say, but we don't want to pin it down, but clearly that's where we're from. Could have been a way an adult would have shared with me something that wouldn't have stumbled me in factuality so much, because this became an issue for me. And then I'm realizing now, watching the show, it's like, no wonder I thought we were in LA, because we were in LA. They just, but every time I wanted to get an answer on that, I was told no. It literally, so that I would go away and never think of the problem again. And it was like, no, yeah, come on.
That is the difference between being treated like a kid as opposed to a small adult.
Yeah.
They could have just cleared that up. That could have been just very easy. And, you know, this is not something we want to discuss, but of course we're in LA. That's why Wes Parker is our guest star.
Yeah. And next year it'll be Deacon Jones. And after that, it'll be Don Drysdale. You know, I mean, right. Open your eyes.
And then,
that's what I was thinking, but I was told I was wrong.
And then the only time we really broke that code was with Joe Namath later from the Jets, of course. But that was much later.
That would be a premonition, because, you know, he's the Jets at the time and then ends up with LA 5 years later, whatever, 7 years later. So, but yeah, I don't know. Just my own personal, I'm realizing by watching the show, and I get to watch part of me from long ago, it brings up the logics that were in play at the time. And I'm constantly curious about how I processed some of the logic.
It was a confusing time for many of us.
Yes, well, and of course, your inability to find an older woman would end at cut.
Well, I don't know. I'm on to the substitute teacher now. Let's see.
Well, I'm saying as soon as you didn't have another episode that played this out, but at cut, now you're Barry, and there's Florence, and the rest will go down in history. We'll have to talk about your relationship with Florence at some point.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, but I mean, this is how it can help make sense. You know, think about 15. We're living in an adult world, a professional environment. I'm trying to grow up and be as mature as I can. Girls my age, 15, 16 years old. So, I mean, you know, they're not serious about, you know, many things at that point, at least weren't in the day, or, you know, mostly the things that they were really interested in were not things that I had interest in. People like, Florence Henderson did. And I mean, she was a singer, she was into music, and I love singing and music, and I had experience on Broadway, and I wanted to go to Broadway. She had, you know, a lot of common interests. So.
But what kills me is, as you're explaining this to me, as it's only normal.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, it is normal for you, it's not necessarily normal. People that are, or especially younger, wound up and attracted to those of a similar mindset, which is an age, but not you. I get that. There are norms that are broken, but I know from your vantage point, it's like, that's how everyone was.
Well, you know, you've got to build a relationship on a foundation. And I had some foundational common interests with a very attractive person who happened to be maybe 20 years older than me. But I don't want any labels on this. No labels, please. No labels.
We won't. We've talked about it and gotten nowhere. So we will bring it up again in the future.
Yes.
When Barry is more willing to describe the relationship he had with Florence.
Bring it up again. I can't get away from it.
Well, your live mic is going to go cold here in a moment. We'll have to catch up on this.
You know why?
Because at another time.
We have covered this episode, but you know, we have many, many more to go. About 90 of them.
Actually, we're almost a quarter of the way through.
Well,
you know.
Well, this has been fun. I won't want it to end. We'll have to move on to the cartoon show and break those down and break down the variety show.
There's plenty more episodes where you have a girlfriend.
A very Brady Christmas. Brady's.
Yeah, we have reunions after the original series is broken down.
Been a lot of fun. Let's let everybody get back to doing whatever they were doing. With the thanks for joining us for this little episode of the episodic recap.
The undergraduate, yes.
Thanks all for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight, and we are
the Real
Brady Bros.
Have a sunshine day, everybody.